I'll go on further and walk under the arcades on your left. This is the portico of Via dei Musei, very characteristic of this part of Piazza Maggiore. The tower is not yet to be seen. In front of you is the eastern side of the Basilica of St. Petronius. Turn left and go further on along the portico dell'Archiginnasio. You're entering Piazza Galvani. Your aim now is to get to the passage that is right behind the scientist's statue, but while you're getting closer, let me tell you a story. Though it is not Bologna's cathedral, and not by chance, the Basilica of St. Petronius is nevertheless the most majestic and famous church of the city. With its 132 metres length and 60 metres breadth, it is now the fifth biggest church in the world. But in actual fact, it should have occupied a much higher place in this ranking. In fact, when the building work started in 1390, it was destined to outrank St. Peter in Rome. For this reason, on the 9th of April of the same year, the Cornacchina Tower was demolished to make way for the forthcoming site. High and beautiful, it disappeared in a matter of minutes, thanks to tried and tested demolition techniques. A system of tunnels bored at the foundations and temporarily supported with wooden props was in usage for a long time. By setting fire to the wooden props, the tower, no longer supported, would collapse with a great rumble. Hundredweights of bricks fell down in a second. Nevertheless, St. Petronius never reached the dimension the architects had planned and desired. In fact, the Vatican never accepted the pretensions of the city, pro-pope in theory, but in practice extremely independent, and it tried to stop the construction in any possible way. On occasions, Rome closed the tap on resources. On other occasions, it preferred to magnanimously erect large buildings very close to the basilica's perimeter, as was the case with the Archiginnasio, to prevent the building of the transept of the Latin cross plant, at present characterized by the famous façade that was never completed. You should now be close to the passage behind Galvani's statue. This leads you to Corte Galluzzi. Once you pass the great arcade and reach the little square, have a look on your left and see what you have been looking for. The Galluzzi Tower is part of a so-called triad of Bologna's medieval skyscrapers, along with its colleagues Prendiparte and Azzaguidi, which you will see in another area of the city centre. Even if they are not close to one another, each of these three towers belong to Guelph families, that is, pro-pope, and not by chance are they in crucial places of the city from this point of view. The Azzaguidi and the Prendiparte are close to the bishop's seat, while the Galluzzi is near the former location of the town hall, the Sant'Ambrogio complex. It was of crucial importance for these seats of power to have nearby these gigantic friends, both useful as a defence and offence instruments against the opposing party, the Ghibellini. But let's go on. The Galluzzi still nowadays stands out for its height, 30 metres, and it was for sure much higher in the past, and its strength. Its walls are so thick as to discourage all attacks and fires, boasting a solidity that has always been a synonym of power and wealth. However, back to us. The Galluzzi Tower is even more interesting for the context in which it is included. As you can see, you're in a single residential complex that used to be called Curia, that is a complex in which there were houses, the private chapel, and the towers of one single family. Don't be shocked to see posh shops, offices and restaurants in these buildings. Back in the old times already, as soon as the towers had lost their wharf functions, that is, shortly after the construction of the Galluzzi around the middle of the 13th century, it was quite common to reuse these spaces for artisans and merchant shops. Nowadays, on the tower's ground floor, there's a bookshop. You can go in, the door has been constructed in recent times, to see from the inside at least the different types of brickwork highlighted by an excellent restoration. When you go back outside, take a look at the building's original door. It's the opening around 6 metres above the ground. Can you see it? Well, seen like this, it is not that significant, but in actual fact, we can learn a lot from it. On the one hand, its ogival shape reveals that the tower is relatively modern, in as far as the doors and windows of antecedent towers are either cantilevered or round, stylistically older. On the other hand, you can clearly see that the stone has been worn down by stamping. This may be the evidence of the fact that the door was used to connect the tower and the wooden house close to it, clinging with its beams to the tower's wall. In addition to that, the Galluzzi are said to have been the most out-and-out exponents of the Guelph party, often involved in, and sometimes promoting, riots, murders and attacks against neighbouring families, above all the Carbonesi and the Andalò, belonging to the Ghibelline party. Instead of suppressing hate, the closeness among these families heightened it. I'm telling you this because here in Bologna we had our Romeo and Juliet, like the Montecchi guy and the young Capuleti girl, also a Carbonesi son and a young Galluzzi daughter fell in love, and in spite of their families, they decided to get secretly married. But just like it happened in Verona, their love had a sad and fatal ending. After an assault at the Carbonesi's houses, in which the young man was murdered, the bride's corpse was found hung at a balcony, either because her relatives forced her to suicide, or because they brutally murdered her. Clearly, at the time of the towers, Bologna was bloody and violent, without any religion or value that could limit the craving for power and supremacy. After all, the pioneer of Bolognese scholars, Giovanni Gozzadini, has described the towers as the proudness and evil spirit of individual independence. And it's a correct, though bitter, definition.